In this session, we're going to talk about body language. Unfortunately, body language is a subject with which many people get carried away. But I think that's true of a lot of other areas, too. I've met people who believe in astrology so much they won't even leave the house on a particular day when their sign's not right. Some people believe so strongly in handwriting analysis that they won't hire someone whose handwriting doesn't conform to their system. I've even heard of people who believe they can spot someone who's committed a murder from the way they write. And many years ago, I once lost a job because I couldn't interpret an ink blot test accurately. We don't want to go that far with body language, but it's true that a tremendous amount of our communication is non-verbal. If you want to illustrate this, you can do a really interesting party game where you go around the room and you ask somebody to tell you something non-verbally. For example, a thumbs-up gesture means good, a thumbs-down gesture means bad, shrug of the shoulders means indifference, and so on. I've done it with as many as 50 people and haven't come up with a shortage of gestures. And I suspect that you could do it with 100 people and still be going strong. So there's an awful lot we can do and do non-verbally. However, if we get carried away, we can easily misunderstand gestures. For example, women much more naturally cross their arms than do men. It's just a more comfortable position for a woman to sit. If we interpret that as shutting us off, we can be misreading the situation completely. If we see somebody tug their ear while they're in conversation with us, then we automatically think that means that they're asking for more information, when in actual fact their ear was just itching, it can be a big mistake. Now, particularly if you're dealing with people of other nationalities, you can make serious mistakes. Do you know that while in this country, when you nod your head, it means yes, and to shake your head means no, to an Eskimo, exactly the opposite is true? But let's not get carried away. You won't be negotiating with many Eskimos. But let me just tell you the story of probably the biggest non-verbal misunderstanding of all time. Back in 1960, when the American space effort had been embarrassed by the success of Sputnik, President Kennedy decided the thing to do was to give us a giant national goal that would draw us all more closely together. And that goal was to be to put Americans on the moon within the following 10 years. And we were to make everything public. People would see the successes, the failures, and the American public would rally around this grand, exciting goal for the following 10 years. And that's pretty much the way it worked. And in 1970, when our men finally stood on the moon, and NASA control said to them, "What's it like up there?" There were over 1 billion people watching on television, the greatest communication extravaganza of all time. And when they were asked, "What's it like up there?" they replied non-verbally with an A-OK gesture with the hand. Now, that was fine for millions of Americans that were watching, because the A-OK gesture is traditionally American and very well understood. But for the other almost 1 billion people watching on television, the gesture was completely misunderstood, because it's very similar to a gesture that's known around the world, where the thumb is touched to the center figure and a hostile gesture is made. And one can't help believing that some Japanese television commentator might have said to the other, "What did he say? What did he say?" And he says, "I don't know, but he seems awfully mad." Let me illustrate the importance of body language in another way. Let's say that you call to pick up a friend to go to lunch together, and you see through the glass wall of his office that he's on the phone, so you decide to wait outside. He's leaning back in his chair with his feet up on his desk and the phone tucked under his chin. He's making a steeply motion with his hands, a sure sign of confidence. All of a sudden, his feet come down off the desk, he's sitting upright in his chair, and he starts patting his pocketbook, looking for a pen. He looks over to his secretary, touches his thumb to his forefinger, and waggles his hand. She knows what this means, so she gives him a pen, and she starts to write on his pad furiously. When he gets halfway down the pad and he's finished writing, he draws a big line under the bottom of it and puts a big check mark there. Then he stands up, goes around the desk, pushes it in under his desk, and starts leaning on the back of his chair as he talks. At that point, he sees you waiting outside, he gives you a thumbs-up sign, and another sign with the thumb and the forefinger separated slightly, to indicate that he'll only be a couple of minutes, and continues to listen. Then a worried look comes on his face, and as he responds, he touches the side of his nose, an almost sure sign that he's either exaggerating or lying. When he reaches down, making some further adjustments to the figure on his pad, he starts to smile again and reaches for his coat and has it halfway on as he concludes the conversation and hangs up the phone. The point I'm making here is that look how much more you knew about what was going on in that conversation than the person on the other end of the phone did, even though you couldn't hear a word. That's why we suggest that you almost never negotiate over the telephone. Always take the time to go meet the person face to face, so you can tell their body language. Particularly, you can tell when they're getting upset, so that you can adjust your responses appropriately. But the other bad thing about negotiating over the telephone is that you can't shake hands. And in this country, a handshake to settle a deal is such a powerful tool that you should never be in a situation where you can't seal the deal by doing it. This, incidentally, would not be so in many Arab countries, where after the contract is submitted and signed, after the hand has been shaken, that's when the real negotiating starts. Another important thing to remember is that people believe what they see much more readily than what they hear. If, for example, I say to you, well, I'm not going to let it worry me. But when I say it to you, I have my hands in my pockets, my shoulders are slouched, my head is hung low, and I have a worried expression on my face, which would you believe? Am I worried or not? Of course, you believe what you see rather than what you hear. If you're an analytical, our session on body language will not be nearly detailed enough for you. It'll appear very superficial. But if you're like me, I think you'll learn enough in our short session here to get you started in your study of body language. We'll give you some basic fundamentals that you can work with that directly apply to the negotiating process. And from there, you can continue your own study. Two key places where you could continue to study. One is waiting in airports, which can be a very frustrating experience, I know. Start observing the people who are beyond your hearing range. Study their body postures and their body language. Try and interpret what they're doing, particularly the people that are on the telephone in that row of booths. Try to figure out to whom they might be talking. Is it a wife, a lover, an employee? You can probably tell with a little practice just by observing. Remember, though, that only changes in body languages are valid. Don't assume because somebody has their arms folded that they're hostile. The point would be, if their arms were not folded in their general manner of talking, but all of a sudden something that happens in the conversation or in the action around them causes them to fold their arms, that's when body language becomes significant. I once met with an expert on body language who was frequently hired by attorneys to be present in the courtroom to watch the body languages of the witnesses. And this is what he told me was the key issue, to watch for changes in body language. Just because a witness may have a habit of scratching his nose, it doesn't mean that he's necessarily lying. It just means that he may have an itchy nose. But if, under the certain pressure of questioning, all of a sudden his hand involuntarily goes up to the side of his nose, it's a pretty good indication. Incidentally, you can watch that same gesture when you're watching Johnny Carson start his show. He typically says, "We've got a great show for you tonight." But sometimes you'll see his hand involuntarily go up to the side of his nose, indicating that he really doesn't think it's that great a show. The witness in the courtroom, just because their finger may go to their collar frequently, doesn't necessarily mean that they feel a lot of pressure. It may be that they have a brand new shirt on that hasn't been washed yet, and it's just stiff and it's uncomfortable. However, if during the pressure of a particular part of the questioning, then their hand would go to their collar, it definitely means that they feel they're under pressure. This is where my friend would step in, bring it to his attorney's attention, and the attorney during cross-examination would reemphasize this point to try and find out what was really going on in the witness's mind. Watching television is a fascinating way to study body language. We mentioned Johnny Carson, but watch news commentators with the sound turned off. Watch for the blinking of the eyes. Watch for the hand movements. Watch for the gestures. And you'll be amazed at how much you can tell about the kind of story that they're relating. In England, we have an expression that says, "He's a blinking liar." That means that the person, without realizing that they were reading body language, has noticed that the other person's eyes are blinking at a very rapid rate. It's a very sure indication that the person is either exaggerating, lying, or feels very uncomfortable with what they're having to say. If you watch a news commentator with the sound off so that you can concentrate better, you'll be amazed to see the different rates of eye blinks. And you'll see when they're uncomfortable with a news story that they're having to read, you'll see their eye blink rate go up maybe 4 or 5 times. Now let's consider the actual negotiating session and how body language plays a part. First of all, the handshake. There are many different ways of shaking hands. Generally in this country, an acceptable handshake is firm but not too strong. Several steady shakes. And usually we don't use the other hand, although with a well-known acquaintance we may shake hands with both hands. In other words, we put our left hand over the back of the person's hand. This is considered a little bit too forward by many people, particularly when you meet for the first time. It's called the politician's handshake. Another variation of this is gripping the other person's forearm with your free hand. That's known as the minister's handshake. And yet again, there's putting your hand on the other person's shoulder as you shake his hand. And that's a sure signal that she wants you for a committee. Be careful about anything but the straight familiar handshake. Obviously, a damp palm is the sign of nervousness, so look for the person who wipes their hand on their coat as they raise their hand to shake yours. A few years ago, it was unheard of for a gentleman to offer his hand to a lady before she had indicated that she wanted to shake hands. But now, in today's enlightened society, I'm inclined to think that men should offer a hand to a lady in a business situation. But I'm still very conscious of this as I travel around the country giving different seminars. The customs are clearly different in different parts of America. In the south of America, for example, in the southern states, Mississippi, the Florida Panhandle, and so on, I'm still reluctant to offer to shake a lady's hand. Also true in the Bible Belt states, such as Oklahoma. So, be careful and be sure that you're in accord with the local customs in that area. With regard to the negotiating process and the seating around the table, if you're alone and negotiating against two other people, such as a husband and wife, be sure that you don't seat yourself between them. Because if you do, they can exchange glances and signals to each other without you being able to catch them. Also, of course, you can't watch the body language as easily as you could if you had them seated across the table from you. So in that situation, be sure that you have them sit down first and then position yourself across the table, not on the same side. When a large group is negotiating and there are equal numbers on each side, it's typical for them to sit on opposite sides of the table. If the groups are unevenly numbered, then the larger group will try and maintain that same separation so that their larger numbers on one side of the table can dominate the other side. However, if you're a member of the smaller group, you'll want to attempt to split up the seating arrangement so that you're interspersed amongst the other members of their group. It tends to eliminate that feeling of being overpowered. When two people who are on the same negotiating team sit together, they tend to be perceived as speaking with one voice. Whereas if they split up, they tend to be able to present two opinions, which gives them a little more strength. Having met everybody and seated yourself at the table, the next thing to consider is when should the small talk stop and the serious negotiating begin? As you know, it's always very good to relieve tensions with some inconsequential banter to get everybody feeling comfortable and ready to go. There's two very clear signs that experts of body language look for. One is smoking. Contrary to popular opinion, people do not smoke when they're nervous. They smoke when they're relaxed. And I've proven this time and time again. I've had someone come into my office feeling nervous and uptight, possibly feeling that they're in trouble. And if I know that they smoke, I will continue with the small talk until they feel relaxed enough to light up a cigarette. And that's when we can get into business. So when you have members of the team that smoke, a sure sign that they're comfortable enough and relaxed enough to start the serious negotiating is when they light up a cigarette. The other sign is the coat button phenomena. Men will normally keep their coat jacket buttoned until they feel more comfortable with you. So if you have members of the group who still have their coats buttoned, keep on with the small talk until they reach down and relax by opening their jacket. There was a survey done once at a wedding reception where the person doing the survey didn't know whether the people who were there were members of the family or just invited guests. And they were able to tell with 80% accuracy who was there as a member of the family because their coats were unbuttoned, whereas the people who were more of a stranger to the group kept their coats buttoned much longer. As you look around the negotiating table, try to study how frequently people's eyes blink. If you haven't done this before, you'll probably be surprised to see how frequently we blink our eyes. Up to once a second or 60 times a minute is not unusual, although some people are much slower, around 15 to 20 blinks per minute. You'll need this information later because when a person's eye blinking rate changes rapidly, you'll know that they're either very, very alert to what you're saying or under a high degree of tension and may not be telling the truth. The tilt of the head is a very good indication whether people are paying attention to you or not. People whose heads are completely upright and straight as they look at you are probably not paying attention. A slight tilt to the head, particularly if it's accompanied by a hand going up to the chin, is a very good indication that they're paying good attention. Speakers learn to study this. They can spot the members of the audience who are paying close attention by the tilt of the head. And if they have a large segment of the audience who's sitting there with perfectly straight heads, even if they possibly have a smile on their face and appear to be paying attention, they know that they're not. so they'll direct a question to that segment of the audience for which a response is required, or they'll change pace or in some way make that segment of the audience more alert. Of course, if a speaker notices that the people are leaning towards the door, it's a good body language sign that he's lost them. Watch carefully any time the hand goes to the head. A stroking of the chin with the thumb and forefinger indicates that they're very interested in what you're saying. Knuckles folded and under the chin reveal the same type of interest. But when the chin goes into the heel of the hand and the head leans on the hand, it's a clear sign of boredom. When a person who doesn't normally do it, it's not a normal nervous mannerism of theirs. It's something they're doing in this particular situation. When they stroke the side of their nose, it's almost a clear indication that they're either exaggerating or lying to you. I know this all sounds rather far-fetched to you, but your analysis of this in the negotiating situation will prove it for your own good. When a person tugs at their ear, they're saying to you, "I want to hear more about what you have to say." When a person scratches the top of their head, they're embarrassed or uncomfortable with what's going on, so you might want to back off and change direction. What can we learn from the hands? We know that fingers drumming on the tabletop indicate impatience. We know that under severe strain, people may wring their hands, but watch for steepling, too. Steepling means two hands with just the tips of the fingers touching. Particularly if the heels of the hands are not touching, just the tips of the fingers are. It's an indication of supreme confidence. It's very difficult to do that when you're extremely nervous. So if you see somebody doing that, you know that they feel that they're in a very superior position. When a man brings one or more hands to his chest, it's a sign of openness and sincerity. Although when a woman does it, it tends to be one of shock or protectiveness. Touching the bridge of the nose, particularly when it's accompanied by closed eyes, means that the person is really concentrating on what's going on. A hand placed at the back of the neck, whether it's a finger inside the collar or a palm rubbing the back of the neck, is almost a sure sign of annoyance. People really do get hot under the collar, and they really do feel that you're a pain in the neck sometimes. What can you tell from a person who wears glasses? Well, you're familiar with the looking over the top of the eyeglasses expression. It means, "I don't believe you," or "I disapprove." Someone who repeatedly cleans their glasses, and this can happen 3 or 4 times an hour during a negotiation, is in a similar situation to a pipe smoker who's constantly relighting his pipe. It simply means that they need more time to think about it. So you, as a good reader of body language, will at that time either stop talking or talk about something inconsequential while they can mull over the more important points. Anytime somebody puts something in their mouth, whether it's the earpiece of their glasses or a pen or a pencil, think of it as needing more nourishment. They like what they hear, but they want to hear more. Of course, if somebody took off their glasses suddenly and tossed them on the table, you'd know that they were upset with you and they were shutting you off. So watch for this when it's a more subtle signal, too. If someone generally takes their eyeglasses off and lays them down on the table, it means they're no longer listening to you. Another fascinating part of body language is to consider how much space you should give a person when you're communicating with them. This study of how close you should get to another person in the negotiating process has a name all to itself. It's called proxemics. And these scientists have determined that anything less than 1.5 feet is the intimate zone, and you should not intrude upon it without permission. From 1.5 feet to 4 feet is the personal zone. From 4 feet to 7 feet is the social zone, and beyond 7 feet is the public zone. There are a lot of variables here. Quite frankly, one is the national background of the person to whom you're talking. People who come from very crowded countries, such as England, where I was raised, or Japan, are more comfortable in a crowded environment than Americans tend to be. At the same time, we can shut ourselves off more easily. We can be alone in a crowd much more comfortably than can be an American who is more used to wide open spaces. So you can get closer to an Englishman or a Japanese without them feeling offended. And of course the same applies to someone who's raised in a city like Los Angeles or Chicago or New York, as opposed to someone who is raised in the wide open rural environment. The other variable is your size in relationship to the person to whom you're talking. If you're over 6 feet tall and talking to someone who's considerably shorter than you, you must stand back considerably further than you would with someone your own height. Otherwise, you would tend to overpower that person. Another way that you can lessen this overpowering effect is to turn sideways a little bit as you talk to the person so you don't project a gigantic wall. Clearly, learning all this presents quite a challenge to you, doesn't it? And you're expected to know all the negotiating gambits. You're expected to analyze people's personality and at the same time study their body language. That's quite a chore. But the only way you'll get better at it is with practice. Remember that the fourth ingredient that will make you a great negotiator is the willingness to constantly practice these techniques until they become second nature to you. In our final session together, on the other side of this tape, we'll get into an interesting session of the subject of hidden meanings in conversation.
This is the end of side 11. Please fast forward the tape to the end to cue up side 12 for your listening.